The headlines, President Vladimir Putin hails Russia's growing ties with Iran as he meets President Ibrahim Raisi on the sidelines of a major regional summit. Russia says the U.S. will become a party to the conflict in Ukraine if it supplies longer-range missiles to Kiev. Plus, millions of Muslims are on a pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Hussein in the Iraqi city of Karbala to demonstrate their love for the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoo Misha Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The presidents of Iran and Russia, who are in Uzbekistan to attend the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, have met ahead of the event. In their meeting, the historic city of Samarkand, Ibrahim Raisi and Vladimir Putin highlighted a joint resolve to enhance their strategic ties. President Raisi said Iran and Russia can offset the effects of U.S. sanctions by joining their forces. He also criticized the Western states for proposing to hold negotiations while at the same time imposing fresh sanctions against Iran. He said they need to demonstrate a goodwill for the revival of the 2015 deal. The Russian president also noted that relations with Iran are developing positively. He said a Russian delegation of 80 business firms will visit Iran next week. Putin also threw his weight behind Iran becoming a full member of the SCO. Raisi is scheduled to meet with the Chinese President Xi Jinping and Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan later in the day. We talked to political analyst Fuad Izzedi about the significance of Iran joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Let's take a listen.
I think it's both is in interest of Iran to be a member of SCO, and also it's good for SCO to have Iran as a member. Iran is an important Asian country. Iran is number one in terms of oil and gas. It's very much energy rich. Iran, with in cooperation with Russia, could basically provide the energy needs of the Asian continent. Given the historic role of Iran, given the civilizational background of Iran, and given the fact that many of the countries that are member of the SCO are culturally, religiously related to Iran, Iran being part of the SCO is going to be important. And also given the fact that Iran is under sanctions, cooperating both economically and trade and other linkages, economic linkages that Iran will have with SCO countries would be beneficial for Iran to go around sanctions. And we know Russia is under sanctions. China increasingly is facing sanctions from the United States. So this is what I was referring to earlier, that we are seeing the earliest stages of a new world order where Asian countries are going to cooperate more and have the United States leave this part of the world. They can stay in the North American continent. It's large enough for them. They don't need to be poking other countries, especially in Asia.
Meanwhile, China and Russia have held talks on the sidelines of the Shanghai Cooperation Summit. President Xi Jinping has told the Russian counterpart that Beijing is willing to work with Moscow as major powers in the face of global changes.
Facing an ever-changing world, era, and history, China is willing to make efforts with Russia to assume the role of great powers and play a guiding role to inject stability and positive energy into a world rocked by social turmoil.
Vladimir Putin, for his part, commented on China's, quote, balanced position on the conflict in Ukraine. The Russian president also sided with China over the issue of Taiwan. He censured the U.S. for provocations over the island. Putin also said attempts by Washington to create a unipolar world will fail. That was the first in-person talks between the two presidents since Russia launched a military operation in Ukraine late February. Russia says the United States would, quote, cross a red line if it decides to supply Ukraine with a long-range missile system known as HIMARS. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova warned if Washington does so, it would become a party to the conflict. She said Moscow reserves the right to defend its territory. The U.S. has supplied Ukraine with advanced rockets. Washington says Kiev has promised not to use them to strike Russian territory. In the meantime, the United States is preparing to send Ukraine another package of security assistance. Ukraine has requested and received large quantities of weaponry from the United States and its Western allies in the face of the Russian military operation. Moscow says the operation is aimed at preventing Ukraine from being used as a platform for Western aggression. Tehran has censured Washington's new sanctions against a number of Iranian individuals and entities over alleged cyber threats. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said making false propaganda and spreading disinformation about the Islamic Republic is part of Washington's failed policy of Iranophobia, and it will get nowhere. He said such, quote, sordid, illegal, and twisted behavior towards independent nations shows the U.S. politicians' inability to understand global equations or adapt themselves to the realities of the world. The official said Iran itself has been a target of cyber attacks. He said the Islamic Republic has therefore been an important part of international efforts against such activities. Kanani said Washington has always turned a blind eye to cyber attacks against Iran's infrastructure and even its peaceful nuclear facilities. He said the U.S. has even directly and indirectly supported such attacks. On Wednesday, the U.S. imposed sanctions on 10 Iranian individuals and two entities, accusing them of, quote, malicious cyber activities. Now, people have attended a conference in Gaza to condemn the Oslo Peace Accords signed in 1993. Palestinians consider the accords as a major setback for Palestinians and even worse than the Balfour Declaration of 1917, which helped create the Israeli regime on the occupied Palestinian lands. Ashraf Shannon reports.
Palestinians have held a national conference to mark 29 years since the signing of the Oslo Accords. Hundreds of people attended the conference, demanding the cancellation of the agreements. In September 1993, the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, signed the Oslo Accords with the Israeli regime on the lawn of the White House in Washington, D.C. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas asserted the failure of the Oslo Accords and called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw its recognition of the Israeli regime.
As we mark the 29th anniversary of the ill-fated Oslo Accords, we call upon the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from the Oslo Accords and to cancel its recognition of the Israeli regime. Today, we also salute the Palestinian resistance, who managed to liberate the Gaza Strip in 2005. Armed resistance is the key to the liberation of all of Palestine.
The Oslo Accords were meant to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but nearly three decades later, Palestinians consider them as a bad chapter in their history. Attendees slammed the Oslo Accords and expressed their support to resistance against the Israeli regime.
The Zionist enemy will never respect any peace agreements and only understands the language of force. We're here to support armed resistance against the Zionist enemy.
Senior officials attending the conference called on all Palestinians to unite their ranks and adhere to armed resistance against the Israeli occupation.
The Oslo Accords were a stab in the back of the Palestinian people. The Zionist regime is a cancer in the region and it must be removed. All forms of resistance must be used against Zionist forces, and armed resistance is the key to defeat the Zionist occupation.
Observers say the Oslo Accords have only brought calamities to Palestinians and have failed to secure the creation of an independent Palestinian state.
29 years on, Palestinians say that peace accords will not free their land, and it's only armed resistance which will help them regain their rights. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Palestinians hold a funeral for a teen who fell victim to Israeli gunfire near the city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the victim as Uday Salah, saying he was killed by a bullet to his head. He lost his life when the Israeli military stormed his neighborhood in western Jenin overnight. The raid comes a day after two Palestinians lost their lives during an ambush against an Israeli military checkpoint near the same city, which also left an Israeli soldier dead. Israel uses routine night raids across the West Bank, Jenin in particular, as a tactic to scare Palestinian residents. Dozens have been killed during these attacks this year, facing decades of poverty and violence. Jenin has become a focal point of resistance against the Israeli occupation. Earlier, we talked to Mona Kendall, our correspondent in Ramallah, and she explained more about the situation.
And they stormed the houses of two Palestinians, carried out an anti-Israel operation yesterday at the Israeli military checkpoint of Al-Jalali in Jenin. During this raid, clashes took place between Israeli forces and Palestinians, residents of the Kfar Dan village. Palestinian paramedics revealed that 15-year-old Audai Salah was seriously wounded and transferred to hospital. Then they declared that he succumbed to his injuries. We are speaking about another Palestinian who was wounded during this operation. At least one Palestinian was wounded also, and he's a relative of the, of one of the Palestinian martyrs who had been killed by the Israeli soldiers yesterday. We have to mention that during the operation, or the anti-Israel operation to be specific, that was carried out yesterday at the Al-Jalami military checkpoint, this had led to the killing of an Israeli soldier or an Israeli military official.
South Korea has warned the North against using nuclear weapons, threatening Pyongyang with a harsh response. Peace activists have criticized the South Korean government, calling for engagement with a neighboring North. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
North Korea last week legislated how it would use nuclear weapons in case it's attacked, with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un saying it needs its nuclear deterrent to counter the United States. Days later, South Korea says it was ready, together with the U.S., for Pyongyang's new law.
We had already been expecting the major parts of the North Korean legislation and preparing for it through the close cooperation between Seoul and Washington.
The U.S. and South Korea recently completed the largest military exercises in more than 4 years. What North Korea views as threatening behavior, Seoul Tuesday repeated with words.
We warned that the North Korean government would face the overwhelming response by the U.S.-South Korean military alliance and go on the path of self-destruction if it attempts to use nuclear weapons.
In responding to North Korea's so-called provocations, recent missile tests, South Korea has frequently mentioned the U.S. extended deterrence, the use of American nuclear weapons in its defense. Peace activists believe the policy lacks imagination.
I think the government talks about the use of U.S. nuclear weapons because it thinks there is no other way to deter North Korea.
Many argue that the policy of engagement with Pyongyang, pursued by previous South Korean President Moon Jae-in, offers the path toward a lasting solution.
The Yoon Suk-yeol administration is sticking to a hardline policy toward North Korea, which I do not believe can solve the crisis on the Korean Peninsula. The only way to fundamentally solve the crisis is to achieve a peaceful reunification.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has asked the U.S. to permanently station strategic assets here, submarines, ships, and aircraft capable of delivering nuclear weapons. South Korean and American officials will discuss extended deterrence in Washington Friday. The American nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Ronald Reagan, is scheduled to visit South Korea later this month. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Millions of pilgrims from across the world are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala for the annual commemoration of Arba'in. The pilgrims, many of them from Iran, are making the journey towards Karbala on foot. The city houses the shrine of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. This year, the pilgrimage, which is one of the largest religious congregations in the world, reaches its peak on the 17th of September. Arba'in marks 40 days after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. On that day, Imam and dozens of his companions were martyred during the Battle of Karbala nearly 14 centuries ago. Now, hashtag trending takes a closer look at social media reactions to Arba'in, the march and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein.
Hey everyone, welcome to another hashtag trending with me, Ali Reza. Millions of pilgrims from different countries have converged on the Iraqi city of Karbala to show their love and devotion to Imam Hussein. The pilgrims braved extremely hot weather to walk to the holy shrines in Karbala and Najaf. The walk is a good occasion for pilgrims to show their unfathomable love for Imam Hussein. It's also a great chance to show unity among Muslims from different countries. Social media users have taken to Twitter to show their reaction to the ongoing event. We're going to start with our first batch of tweets with this one by Sayyida Zainab. She wrote, "The biggest message of Arba'in is the universality of Islam because Arba'in has processions and pilgrims from all over the world. Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, India, Thailand, Afghanistan, Kuwait, and so on." Tabish Abbas Patan has our next tweet. "The processions of Arba'in, which are attended by millions of people, are reflective of people's attempt to engage in self-purification, self-discipline, and the reformation of the society. In short, they are an exercise to be good soldiers for Imam Mahdi, Ajalallah, hashtag Arba'in 2022. Ishaq Arfi said, "Arba'in's walk journey of love continues as Zawar pilgrims of Imam Hussein alayhi salam march toward the holy city of Karbala, hashtag Arba'in 2022. And that's a wrap for another edition of Hashtag Trending. Until next time, take care and bye-bye.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The EU silence toward the atrocities of the Zionist regime has made this bloc complicit in the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for more. Al Jazeera English wrote, "The very DNA of the Israel-EU relationship reveals that on Palestinian rights, Brussels won't do much. In late June this year, the European Union announced that it would resume funding for two Palestinian NGOs, including Al-Haq and the Palestinian Center for Human Rights. It had suspended financial support in May 2021 after the Zionist regime authorities supplied the European Commission with a dossier that claimed that six Palestinian NGOs, including Al-Haq, were funneling EU funds to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which the Zionist regime describes as a terrorist organization. A few months later, the Israeli regime war ministry extended that terrorist designation to these NGOs too. EU authorities have found no suspicions of irregularities and/or fraud. Still, on August 18th, Israeli regime forces raided the offices of seven Palestinian nonprofits in the occupied West Bank. Be it in response to the unfounded allegations in the 2021 dossier, the raids, or the all-too-frequent military onslaughts on Gaza, the EU has done little to hold the Zionist regime accountable besides ritual but ineffectual expressions of concern. In fact, the EU recently reiterated its commitment to developing closer diplomatic ties and agreed to resume meetings of the EU-Israel Association Council. This is not a diplomatic lapse or misstep. It's important to understand that this impunity is guaranteed in the terms and conditions of EU-Israel relations, where political and economic relations are in no way contingent on the nature of the latter's conduct towards Palestinians. As a result, the Zionist regime can willfully violate Palestinian rights without fear of significant retribution from the EU, its biggest trade partner. The EU-Israel Association Agreement was ratified by EU member states' parliaments, the European Parliament and the Knesset, and entered into force in 2000 after decades of evidence of the Zionist regime's violations of Palestinian rights. Following global outrage regarding the recent Israeli regime raids on the offices of Palestinian NGOs, Brussels decided to adopt a tougher tone. Joseph Borrell, the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, said, "These actions are not acceptable." Yet even now, the EU's concern appears limited to words. In reality, the legal and political basis for EU-Israel relations does not allow for any recognition of Israel's role as a colonial occupier. The bloc of 27 nations has shown no desire to change that. The result? The EU is not an honest or effectual stakeholder in the struggle for Palestinian sovereignty and independence. On the contrary, its approach allows the Israeli regime to operate with complete impunity, human rights be damned. Electronic Intifada wrote that the European Union adores the Israeli regime should come as no surprise to anyone. But in the case anyone had doubts, the bloc's regional peace process envoy, Seven Koopmans, decided to make that clear in an op-ed for Haaretz this week. Almost every sentence oozes with praise and deference for the apartheid regime. Koopmans, of course, never uses the A word. As Israel's neighbor, historic friend, and largest trading partner, enjoying excellent cooperation in technology, education, and much more, we care, Koopmans says, adding, Europeans understand Israel's security concerns. The EU strongly supports Israel's right to fight terrorism within full respect of its international human rights obligations, he said. That's a license for the fabricated regime of Israel to freely kill Palestinians, since the EU has never held the Israeli regime to any international human rights obligations. Meanwhile, Koopmans never acknowledges the right of Palestinians to resist occupation and colonization. Electronic Intifada said, Koopmans does acknowledge that Palestinians suffer, but he equates them with their oppressors and no overhaul the Israeli regime accountable for inflicting this suffering. It's apparently not the Zionist regime that keeps millions of Palestinians under occupation and without rights, but some mystical situation. Koopmans appears to be skirting around how much of the world, the Western world, being the latecomers, understand that Israel is a settler colonial regime that perpetrates the crime against humanity of apartheid. So what's the solution that Koopmans comes up with? Is it to demand the implementation of the countless UN resolutions that hold Israel in violent contempt of international law? Is it to impose costs on Israel for refusing to do so? Is it to defend and uphold the rights of all Palestinians, especially refugees, whom Israel bars from returning home solely because they are not Jews? In fact, Koopmans doesn't mention international law at all. Instead, he urges that those who are of goodwill need to work together to envisage a comprehensive peace, including Israelis, Palestinians, and in fact, the entire region. What he comes up with is the jargon of a management consultant or perhaps a self-help guru, saying, indeed, let us reverse engineer the solution. Rather than draw another roadmap, let's together start drafting the destination, even when essential parts of it can only be identified by Israelis and Palestinians, and probably only once they themselves have almost arrived, he claimed. The EU has, along with its masters in Washington, imposed unprecedented sanctions aimed, so far unsuccessfully, at crushing Russia's economy. And they are funneling fighters and billions of dollars of weapons to help Ukrainians fight. The double standard is very obvious even to those who work inside the halls of Brussels. Last month, Joseph Borrell, the EU's foreign policy chief and Koopmans' boss, admitted as much in an interview with El Pais, saying, resolving the situation of the people trapped in that open-air prison, that is Gaza, is not in the hands of the EU. It is a scandalous situation, a shame, but it is not in our hands to solve it. Borrell responded simultaneously acknowledging the horror the EU's Israeli friends subject Palestinians to, while at the same time absolving Europe of responsibility. As if a mere bystander, Borrell wrings his hands that the international community should find a solution for the crowded people without electricity, almost without drinking water. We are often criticized for having double standards, Borrell adds. But international politics is largely the administration of double standards. We do not face all problems with the same criteria, he said. If that's not bad enough, here is the punchline from this joke of a diplomat. There is no solution to the conflict in the Middle East without a very strong commitment on the part of the United States. Borrell is admitting that the EU can only follow orders from Washington and has no or is not willing to assert any freedom of action.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
وإنما خرجت لطلب الإصلاح في أمة جدي صلى الله عليه وآله.
The words of Imam al-Hussein عليه السلام in dialogue.
صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the son of the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, the son of the Lady of Light, the esteemed Fatima, the grandson of the holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the beacon of light which guides towards patience and fortitude. The one who has eloquently said, "Be aware that all good works bear praise, and they bear commendation and bring about a good reward." Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his dialogues.
Every clean soul and this
Imam al-Hussein's curses that he invoked upon people. O Allah, we are the house of your Prophet Muhammad, his descendants and relatives. Take revenge from whoever has done injustice to us and usurped our right. Indeed, you are the all-hearing and are the near. O Allah, show me today in him a swift despisedness. O Allah, drive him towards the fire. O Allah, kill him in a state of thirst and never forgive him.
As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah wa ala al-arwah allati halat bi fina'i.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of Ziyara al-Nahiya al-Muqaddasa. Stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. السلام على الحسين الذي سمحت نفسه بمهجته.
Peace be upon al-Hussein, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
السلام على من أطاع الله في سره وعلانيته.
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
السلام على من جعل الله الشفاء في تربته.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
السلام على من الإجابة تحت قبته.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
السلام على من الأئمة من ذريته.
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the Imams after him.
السلام على ابن خاتم الأنبياء. السلام على ابن سيد الأوصياء.
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
السلام على ابن فاطمة الزهراء. السلام على ابن خديجة الكبرى.
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadija, the great.
السلام على ابن سدرة المنتهى. السلام على ابن جنة المأوى. السلام على ابن زمزم والصفا.
Peace be upon the son of the lotus tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
السلام على المرمل بالدماء. السلام على المهتوك الخباء. السلام على خامس أصحاب أهل الكساء.
Peace be upon him who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa binasteen. Assalamu alaykum wa abdillah. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is an episode of the program The Dialogue, and I'm Dr. Fakhr Rouhani. Now we are going to be concerned with some of the curses of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam. When some people, when some enemy soldiers on the enemy side, showed their insolence toward Imam al-Hussein al-Salam. They showed their being really very shameless. Imam al-Hussein al-Salam cursed them because some of them approached the front lines of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam's encampment and intended to cause problems, to tease Imam al-Hussein al-Salam, to make fun of him. And then Imam al-Hussein al-Salam had no choice but, expressing his anger, his wrath, in a very serious way. From this we understand that those people who received Imam al-Hussein al-Salam's curses, many of them, experienced the effects of curses that they had received from Imam al-Hussein al-Salam. And at the same time, what's important in this regard is that those people who receive the prayers and appreciation of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam achieved eternal felicity. Now we find that in this case, in this chapter as indicated it, some people came to oppose Imam al-Hussein al-Salam in words just before the outbreak of the actual battle. They came near Imam al-Hussein al-Salam's encampment and started rebuking him and making fun of him. In return to this, Imam al-Hussein al-Salam invoked several curses against them, and in the case of many of them, the curses of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam showed the effect, and those people received the unfavorable end at the same time. On the spot. Thank you.
Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always.
عليك مني
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee has vowed to investigate corruption allegations in President Donald Trump's Justice Department. Please stay with us for more. In the U.S., the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee has vowed to investigate corruption allegations in former President Donald Trump's Justice Department. Details of the story are given in the website salon.com. The Senate Judiciary Committee announced on Monday, 12th of September, that it will probe former federal prosecutor Jeffrey Berman's claim that former President Donald Trump and Attorney General Bill Barr sought to pressure federal prosecutors to go after Trump's perceived enemies. Judiciary Chairman Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, said in a letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland that the panel will investigate claims of astonishing and unacceptable deviations by Department of Justice officials to pursue partisan prosecutions and William Barr's efforts to replace Berman with a Trump loyalist. Berman's claims indicate multiple instances of political interference, Dick Durbin wrote, calling on the Department of Justice to produce all documents and communications related to Berman's claims. It violated all the norms and traditions of the Department of Justice, which is supposed to be independent from politics. Berman told MSNBC's Rachel Maddow on Monday. He said, Trump turned the department into his own personal law firm. He put in people who would do his bidding. And they would, you know, target Trump's political enemies and assist Trump's friends. And it was a disgrace. Berman, a Republican former Trump transition official who served as a U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York until he was fired by Donald Trump in June of 2020, wrote in his upcoming book, Holding the Line, that he resisted the worst of the attempted interference, whether from Maine Justice or from the White House, according to an excerpt published by the New York Times. Berman was fired by Donald Trump after he refused William Barr's request for him to resign after he led the prosecutions of multiple Trump allies, drawing allegations of corruption at the Department of Justice. Berman wrote that William Barr pushed his office to drop its prosecution of former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, who was ultimately convicted on 8 federal charges, including campaign finance violations that he claimed were on behalf of Donald Trump. Berman told ABC News that Department of Justice officials also pressured his office to remove references to Donald Trump from Michael Cohen's indictment. On the eve of Michael Cohen's guilty plea, Maine Justice tried to get our office to remove any reference to individual one, who was President Donald Trump, he said. They were unsuccessful in that venture, and they were unsuccessful in every attempt to politically interfere with our office. We held the line in every instance. Berman also claims that Justice Department officials pressured his office to prosecute former State Secretary of State John Kerry. Donald Trump publicly called for John Kerry to be prosecuted over claims that he discussed the nuclear deal with Iranian leaders while Donald Trump was in office. When Berman declined to prosecute John Kerry, Department of Justice officials asked another U.S. attorney's office, which likewise declined, according to Berman. That was truly outrageous, Berman told ABC News on Monday. President Trump attacks John Kerry in 2 tweets saying that Kerry engaged in possible illegal conversations with Iranian officials regarding the Iran nuclear deal. The very next day, the Trump Justice Department refers the John Kerry criminal case to the Southern District of New York. 2 tweets by the president and the John Kerry criminal case becomes a priority. Berman also claimed that Department of Justice officials told his deputy to charge Democratic lawyer Greg Craig ahead of the 2018 midterm elections to even things out. Craig was ultimately prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C., but was acquitted by a jury in less than 5 hours of charges that he misled the Department of Justice about his lobbying work for Ukraine. The Justice Department told us, "Hey, you have just indicted 2 allies of President Trump, Chris Collins, who is a Republican congressman from upstate New York, and Michael Cohen, who was the president's lawyer and fixer. And it's time for you guys to even things out and indict a Democrat before the midterm elections," Berman told ABC News. It was something we had never heard before or seen before. The Bloomberg News Agency also covers the same story from a different perspective. The chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee vowed to investigate allegations in a new book that President Donald Trump's Justice Department demanded that critics of the president be prosecuted. These reported claims indicate astonishing and unacceptable deviations from the department's mission to pursue impartial justice, which requires that its prosecutorial decisions be free from political influence, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois wrote in a letter on Monday to Attorney General Merrick Garland, asking for information regarding the allegations. Senator Dick Durbin's concerns center around the book Holding the Line by Jeffrey Berman. The former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, whose ouster 2 years ago raised questions about political interference in a set of investigations into Donald Trump, his companies, and people close to him. If accurate, Jeffrey Berman's claims indicate multiple instances of political interference in the department's investigative and prosecutorial decisions, Senator Durbin said. He added, the Senate Judiciary Committee will certainly investigate these episodes. Jeffrey Berman stepped down in June of 2020 during an acrimonious and public confrontation with the then Attorney General William Barr. At the time, Jeffrey Berman said he stepped down only after being told that a trusted deputy would succeed him, and in light of Attorney General William Barr's decision to respect the normal operation of law. The Justice Department confirmed that it had received Senator Durbin's letter but declined further comment. William Barr on Monday night declined to comment on the book, which is scheduled to be published on Tuesday. The Senate panel investigation would add to the list of legal challenges facing the former president. The Justice Department has subpoenaed dozens of campaign operatives and allies of Donald Trump as part of a broad effort to collect information relating to the plot to overturn the 2020 presidential election, according to people familiar with the matter.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a beautiful and noble hadith and narration which has been passed down to us from Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. This beautiful hadith is about concealment of secrets. You know, the concealment of secrets in general is a virtue. It is something very respectable, and it is necessary, and in some cases, extremely necessary. This is in general. In regarding this topic, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, "To keep silent is wisdom, quietness is safety, and concealment of secrets is a part of prosperity." Also, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam said, "By Allah, I would like to sacrifice the meat of my forearm for two vices of our followers: heedlessness and little concealment of secrets." But concealment of the secrets of a believer, or even in some cases the imam himself. Of course, we're not in the time of the presence of the imam, right? But in the time of the presence of the imam, concealing their secrets to protect them. This is one of the most emphasized of obligations. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said the following with respect to Allah's verse in the Holy Quran, that because they would defy the signs of Allah and kill the prophets unjustly, right? This is a reference to the Jews, right, who have been accused in the Holy Quran of killing the prophets unjustly. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, in elucidation of this verse of the Holy Quran, said the following: "By Allah, they did not kill them with their hands, nor did they strike them with their swords." I mean, they didn't actually directly kill these prophets. What did they do then? But they listened to their private speeches and publicized them. These prophets were probably preaching in private to a small group of people. You know, obviously these prophets, you know, in lots of cases, they were, you know, in very restricted and confined situations. They lived in places where they were under the government of a tyrant who didn't like them and didn't want to hear the monotheistic teachings, right? So they had to privately preach their message, their monotheistic and tawhidi message. So these people, right, they listened to these speeches and they publicized them. They told, and they brought them out in the open, and then obviously the tyrant of their times, they heard about this. They were able to, find out the location of these prophets, and then they were killed. So they were punished because of it and killed, the imam says. Right? So this is one of the grave sins. And, obviously we're not in the time of the presence of the imam, but like, let's say that we're in a place where, the government of that nation or that city or that area, right, is opposed to Islam or Muslims or the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, it's not good for us to publicize the beliefs of our fellow brothers and put them in danger. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the concealment of secrets in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.